All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. Izzy Gutierrez is on his third shirt today because he realized the green screen means you can't wear green. Mina Kimes, she just got a painting behind her. It works.
Just a floating head.
What does Joel Embiid Supermax mean for the 76ers?
All right, so there's this new thing going on in the NBA now where normally guys were going all the way to free agency, and that's how they wielded their leverage. Now we've seen a bunch of guys sign these long extensions years before they were coming up on free agency, and now Joel Embiid has signed a four-year extension for $196 million. He's got $53 million on the last year of that deal in a player option. And what does this mean for the Sixers? I don't think it means anything terribly different than it meant before. The game has changed in this place where the players now with wielding power understand they can go ahead and lock up the security of a long-term deal and then just force a trade if they want to get out of here. There's no need for them now to walk this all the way to the end and wind up in a situation that could get dicey, especially if you're a dude like Joel Embiid where your body betrays you fairly often. He went ahead and locked up the money, and the truth is, even without a longer-term deal, the Sixers were going to be all in on him because he is a caliber of player that doesn't come around often enough for you to give it up, even if he winds up only playing 60 games a year. So I don't think anything has really changed other than the way things work in the NBA now, where we're not going to have the high-profile free agencies that we used to because guys are going to lock up that money knowing that they can flex when the time comes.
This was the one scenario that if you played it out, I thought maybe could have gotten kind of dicey, right? He doesn't sign this extension, and then you go into next year, you don't pull off a Ben Simmons trade, and Joel Embiid is pretty unhappy, and then going into his final season demands a trade. That would be one that I would say, hey, that could have happened. So this, if you're the Sixers, you can breathe easy, because at least you have him locked up even before you have this Ben Simmons decision. Now, we can assume the Ben Simmons thing will still happen. He will get traded, and you go on from there. But he doesn't seem to have those injury protections in this contract. I look at last season and say, okay, maybe they dodged a couple bullets, or maybe that's a sign that he can be durable, right? Because that first 11 games that he missed, it felt like it was going to be worse than that. And I definitely felt he was going to miss way more than one game after that knee injury in the playoffs. So maybe he's looking at himself saying, hey, I put a lot on myself this season. I withstood whatever 70 games, 60 games. I'm good. And so you have the confidence going forward, because if he doesn't miss those 11 games, you're looking at the MVP. That was the difference between everybody's measurements between him and Jokic, is those 11 games that he missed. So if you're the Sixers, you're great. I've got an MVP in my hands as long as he plays 60 to 70 games. And then you just tinker with the roster from there, because you don't need that much around him, or you just need specific types of players around him to really take advantage of everything that Embiid brings.
Yeah, Izzy, the absence of the injury clause or the sort of incentives in his last contract, that's the only thing I would feel nervous about if I was a Sixers fan moving forward, because it is such a long contract and he does have such a fraught history when it comes to injuries. But I would feel good about another thing, which is while Bomani makes an excellent point about leverage and the fact that players don't actually have to hit free agency to exercise their leverage anymore, he did give up one piece of leverage in signing this, which is there was a possibility he would hold out until they traded Ben Simmons. Like, we know that these two dudes don't exactly love each other, and it wasn't a given that Joel wanted to play with Ben Simmons, and it was definitely possible that he would sit on this contract until they did something. Now there's no push for them to do it in the immediate future, and frankly, the longer this drags on, the more chess pieces get moved around in the NBA. I'm not sure they're going to get anything done when it comes to him, even if it would be the best thing from a basketball perspective when it comes to putting together a roster around Embiid.
Well, there's also this possibility that before signing said extension, there was a, but you know what you got to do, right? Right? You know what you got to do? Okay, just we all on the same page? Okay, we good. I see you. If he wants Ben Simmons gone, Ben Simmons is gone, period.
I do wonder how long Daryl Morey is going to play that game on the leverage and see what he wants, because, man, it's going to be quite interesting if you start the season with both of those guys on the same roster. There's no way they're even going to show up in the same place, I would imagine, much less play on the same team this upcoming year.
Look, man, how many people that building holds? 17,000? Let's call it 17,000. If it's 17,000 people that can fit in that arena, Joel Embiid is person 17,001 in terms of who wants Ben Simmons out of there the most.
Are you surprised that Urban Meyer actually cut Tim Tebow?
All right, so Urban Meyer, like, I don't even know if this would put him in the Homeboy Hall of Fame, the Play Daddy Hall of Fame. I don't know what exactly it is, but he brought Tim Tebow back into the NFL and was like, hey, you can try to be a tight end, because people think that all you have to do to be a tight end is weigh something like 240 pounds. They just think anybody who does that, who's done anything else, you can just plug them in and have them play tight end. And he had to cut Tim Tebow today. And when I say he had to cut Tim Tebow today, I mean he had to. Because one, you know Urban Meyer would not release Tim Tebow unless he had to. And number two, after this, he had he gave you that arrow, because you might have been thinking it was going to be a big play, except it was a very small play. A really little play is what that block was. Come on, man. Like, after film, you can't have that dude in. And then this happens. There he goes again.
This one's worse, yeah.
Yo, and see, here's the thing for me about this with Tebow, and it's not going to affect his quote-unquote legacy and all that. I understand it. But the whole argument behind Tebow, and a big part of why everybody who loves him as much as they do, is the idea that he just wants to win so bad. He is such a selfless team guy. He is such an insatiable competitor. The whole idea, because physically he can't do it. The whole idea is that he's so magically competitive that he'll make your team better. There's your competitor right there. Did that look at all like a competitive player? Did that at all look like a guy who just really wants to win? In some ways, he got exposed there. He didn't have to do this. And he went out there and looked like a dude who didn't have to do it.
He didn't just get exposed. He exposed others to risk. Like, that's the difference between baseball and football. He can play AAA and strike out a lot or whatever. But in football, if he misses a block, some dude is getting hit, as you saw there. Like everything involving Tebow, this metastasized into like a weird culture war debate. But the truth is, it was just a weird flex for both Urban and for Tebow. Tebow flexing his ability to apparently try anything, you know, once and see how it goes. And Urban flexing the fact that he is running this NFL team, or to an extent has been running it, like he did in college. And that's the problem going forward. Like, the Tim Tebow era in Jacksonville is over, and that's fine. But Urban's reign, that's going to continue. And if he persists in making these types of decisions, he does run the risk of losing the locker room.
Well, initially, we all thought that Urban brought him in to be the locker room guy, right? So, hey, you'll be my eyes and ears in there. You'll set the culture for me, yada, yada. But now, and I'm going to try not to look directly at Bomani when I say this, now it reminds me of that episode of Friends where Monica hires Joey at the restaurant just so she could fire him. I'm sorry, I can't look at both. And look like the tough person. And I feel like that's exactly what Urban did here, right? You bring in Tim Tebow, everybody says, hey, he's going to be your guy. And then you're like, nope, you're terrible. Get out of here. And then all the locker room respects you. I mean, I think it's a brilliant move from Urban. He got us all.
I liked Friends.
What?
Wait, what?
I
don't understand why this is such a shocking development for you.
Let's reset the show and start at the top and discuss Bomani liking Friends. Because I swear on my life, you've done nothing but insult that show. I must have mistaken you with somebody else.
Yes, yes, yes. And I bet I know what that other person has in common with me.
Could you see Sean Payton actually rolling with Taysom Hill over Jameis Winston?
All right, it ain't too often that you have one of these quarterback competitions where it is legitimately a competition, and I don't think anybody really knows who's going to be the starter, like the ones with these rookies involved in them. You're like, yo, eventually the first round pick is going to wind up being the starter. We got no idea which one of these not so great ideas Sean Payton is going to sign up for. But in the Monday Morning Quarterback, Peter King says that Sean Payton leaning toward Taysom Hill at this point. This is where he's going. And I guess, dog, like, if that's what you want to do. Because the thing about Taysom Hill is this. He can do all that running back stuff, but the quarterback stuff, like, it's not even like he's the guy like Logan Thomas was, who could throw the ball really hard and just didn't have any control over it. Taysom Hill be out there throwing the lollipops. I don't think that you have any reasonable expectation that he's going to run a timing passing game. And, oh, by the way, he's not that young, so you don't even know how long he's actually going to be fast. On the other side is Mr. Magoo. And we just have no idea whether or not Jameis getting his eyes fixed is going to put him in a position where he can remember who plays on what team. Maybe he rolls with Taysom Hill. I honestly can't be mad at him with whatever direction he goes in, because neither of them feels like a good idea.
I don't know if this feels like this to you guys, but it feels like one of those conversations that we're pretty much only going to have in the preseason because I don't think the team's going to be very good. And I don't know why that makes any sense, because without Drew Brees, they were fine, right? They were good without him before, whether it be Bridgewater or Taysom Hill. But it just doesn't seem like either of these options are great ones. And I mean, to me, if you're going to pick one, you've got to go with Jameis Winston, at least so far, based on the first preseason game, had the better possessions. And just can take the top off the defense. Granted, sometimes he throws it down there when there's three defenders down there as well, but it doesn't seem like you can open up the playbook with Taysom Hill, at least not things that'll take you, you know, further than 10, 15 yards at a time. And I feel like even though Drew Brees did not specialize in the deep ball, it still remained a threat. So it feels like Sean Payton really, really wants Taysom Hill to be the quarterback, and Jameis Winston's just going to have to grab it out of his hands.
I want to get into the Taysom Jameis thing, but I can't let you, like, I can't let it slide that you said there was a threat with the deep ball with Drew Brees. You know, I just can't let you say that, Izzy. Like, the last 2 years of Drew Brees, that ball was not going further than 10 yards. Okay, now that I've made Saints Twitter angry at me, I will try to win them back by giving you guys an answer. It should be Winston. Like, I watched this game, and, you know, the rap on Winston is obviously the turnovers, right? Like, this is his reputation, 30-30, whatever. But the thing about Taysom Hill that people don't acknowledge is he turns the ball over a lot too. Last year he started four games and he had 10 fumbles. That was third in the NFL. There's multiple ways to turn the ball over. And watching this preseason game, both guys threw picks. Winston's was an underthrown deep ball. Hill's was him making a bad decision. If I'm Sean Payton, I'm a little bit more worried about the latter. I'm also a little bit more confident in Jameis's ability to do something with this offense. Because as you said, Izzy, this roster is not as good as it was the last few years. And their only chance, I think, to contend is a higher variance quarterback like Jameis, even if it backfires spectacularly.
I know this. If Jameis doesn't become the starter, I hope he got his receipt from that finishing school that he went to in the offseason. Jameis came back. He came back enunciating a whole lot more, right? The verbs agreeing a lot more than they did before. Not because he didn't know how to make it happen before, but he's on a permanent job interview right now. He got the they around voice on every time I hear an interview with him. And if he does all that to still not win out at quarterback against a dude that don't even really seem like a quarterback, oh no, I'm going to need my money back.
Up next on HQ.
This is a new age of parenting that I don't understand. I cannot imagine the fathers of my generation, not the fathers who come from my generation, but those who fathered us, allowing you to do that to them in front of people, no less.
Time to play the game that wonders what Izzy would look like with facial hair. Do you question?
Good question. Now that you mention it, you give us topics and events, we question them.
You don't want to know. I can't really grow it full out. It looks kind of like ratty. It doesn't connect right here. It's not pretty.
Oh, now I really want to see it.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see that. Yeah. Someone at home do like a Photoshop for us.
Do you question Travis Kelce's new look?
All right, so Travis Kelce used to be a bearded fellow, and apparently he is not a bearded fellow anymore. Let's get a look at this. Okay, that's what he used to be. Mm-hmm.
GQ.
And here he...
Wow.
So, like...
Are we sure
Yeah, so the Travis Kelce from the picture on the left, and based on his get down and everything, I used to often ask the question where he was radicalized. You know what I'm saying? Like just he appeared to have adopted some cultural characteristics, and I was just wondering where they came from. I seen his brother. It's hard to believe they grew up in the same house. But that dude in the picture on the right, that's Jason Kelce's brother right there.
I didn't think hair can do so much for a human being. He went from like sultry and seductive at all times to just Southern. Like, you just get rid of the hair, and he's just a dude from the South, it looks like. I don't really understand how that works.
He's from Ohio, I think. I mean, right. The problem is, and I don't want to call it a problem, by the way, because we women, we got makeup, so we can, you know, change our appearance a lot more easily than men. So I'm not casting shade, but I think it's that he has the buzz cut and no beard. Like, he could have no beard and hair, or the buzz cut and the beard, but he looks kind of like denuded at this point. And you're exposing a lot. You're exposing your skull and your chin at the same time, putting it all out there. And somehow he looks like older and younger at the same time. Like, I don't know.
This is what I'm trying to figure out. Did he get a new girlfriend or a new business manager, right? Because, like, the decision to make such significant changes with your facial hair and the likes like that is very often because your new girlfriend likes it. So did he get, shall we say, a new girlfriend, or did he get a new business manager who looked at him and said the equivalent of, like, when they go up to the white rappers and be like, yo, you can make money here, but when I give you this acoustic guitar, now we're going to make it all the way to the big time. Like, he looks to be in transition.
Do you question if Tyrese Maxey's dad knew how this was going to go?
All right, so we are going out to a basketball camp in Texas that Tyrese Maxey is at. His dad is also there. His dad played college basketball at Washington State. What we got here? Dad on defense.
Oh, wow. It didn't even take that much.
Yeah.
Got him completely turned around. There's a certain age. I don't know what it is. I feel like it's 15, 15, 16. You stop playing your kids. If they, like, dedicate their entire life to this sport, you got to cut it off, because they had a couple of goals, right? One goal, make it professional, maybe. Second goal, beat your dad or any older relative. And then if you have a third goal, if you happen to have a basketball camp, beat your dad in front of everybody that can possibly see it. So that was a bad move by the dad there. He set himself up.
If I were a kid, the second they beat me in anything, it is over. Like, I'm never playing them again. I don't know what his dad was thinking there. Like, he should have grabbed him. Like, if he's his dad, what's he gonna do? Complain?
Wow.
This is where I'm going with this. This is a new age of parenting that I don't understand. I cannot imagine the fathers of my generation, not the fathers who come from my generation, but those who fathered us, allowing you to do that to them in front of people, no less. My brother has scars on his body from trying to get the winning basket against my dad. You're not going to do that. I cannot believe that Tyrese Maxey is not going to be out 6 to 9 months with a catastrophic injury. But then I remembered. I mean, you don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Got to take a little bit of shave here to make sure that, you know, you can drive a BMW too.
My dad didn't play basketball, but if I would have gotten him on a move or he would have turned around, by the time he would have done the entire 360, he would have had his belt out ready for me, because there was no way he was going to get embarrassed in front of all those people.
My dad used to crush me in Monopoly and cheat. I was 4.
We can tell. We can tell.
Ain't beating me now.
Time to play the game that would like to remind Tim Tebow, you got an open invitation to my flag football team anytime you want. See? Or no?
You tell us what's on television tonight, we tell you if we're intrigued.
That wasn't bad.
Tonight at 7:10 p.m. Eastern, Cubs and Reds.
All right, these are the two teams that'll play in the Iowa Classic next year for Major League Baseball. Now, Joey Votto got his 2,000th hit last night. He was talking about, you know, getting to that milestone and what he did with the baseball from his first hit.
They were talking about what I'm going to do with the 2,000th hit, and I said, we were teasing one another, and I said, my very first hit I gave to my dog to eat, and, you know, it doesn't exist. You know, Maris, he passed away last year, but he was a young dog, and I just wanted him happy, and maybe it wasn't a good thing to give him. I don't know if you should be giving dogs baseballs, but I did at the time. And my very first major league hit doesn't exist anymore. It was chewed up and spit out by him, and he loved it, by the way. I was young and I didn't know, so it wasn't like I was intentionally. To the dog lovers out there, I don't think anybody, I mean, Rob, I took great care of Maris. Great care of Maris. So, like, it was a mistake at the time, and I knew better after somebody told me, hey, don't give your dog a baseball.
He said that the dog
ate it.
But enjoyed it. The enjoying part is what throws me off. Like, if the dog just kind of, like, wanted to bat it around and play with it, that's one thing. He acted like the dog was happy to get the taste of baseball, which makes me wonder, what were you feeding that dog, Joey Votto?
Izzy, dogs love intrigued. Baseballs. Dogs love leather. That's why they eat shoes.
Can we just get the soundtrack of Mina? Sorry, Mina. Can we just get the soundtrack of Mina saying, aw, right after he said that, because that is the most adorable story I've ever heard. I don't care what people do with their first baseball or with any hit. You could just get another one and sign it and say, hey, this was my first baseball hit. But this story is tremendous. Oh, and Maris, it's got the whole baseball tie. Oh, poor Maris. I don't know Maris. I don't know what breed he is, but I miss him.
You're still thrown by the fact that dogs like to eat leathery baseballs. That's like their favorite scent is used leather.
I think Bomani's just thrown by the idea of people liking dogs that much.
That's true. Yeah.
Kinda. All right. That is our show. Izzy Gutierrez. One day he gonna get out that office. Mita Kimes. Check out the Mita Kimes show with Lenny, her dog who likes leathery things. It's a podcast.
All dogs.
Check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones. I have no idea why I'm in front of a fireplace in South Florida, to be honest.
I just appreciate you talking about the show because Mina too busy talking about a damn dog.